The official EFL podcast, the best reaction to all the match action.
Hello and welcome again to the official EFL podcast, previewing and reviewing the best of the match action across the EFL and its competitions. On this edition of the show, we'll also be featuring the careers of two of the EFL's longest serving players. But first, let's take a look back to Tuesday night and what a night it was for Sunderland.
The Checkatrade Trophy.
It's a good ball from Power as well. Here's Will Grigg, 1-0 Sunderland, just before half-time. It's a decent effort as well on the follow-up. And it's turned in for 2-0 by Lewis Morgan. Sunderland are heading to Wembley. Jack Ross has steered his team to the final of the Checkatrade Trophy.
Yes, so the Black Cats are through to the Checkatrade Trophy final, a mouth-watering match to look forward to at Wembley against Sky Bet League One promotion rivals Portsmouth. Here's what manager Jack Ross had to say to Sunderland's media team about his side's achievement.
We've always been aware of the prize at stake, and ultimately that's winning the competition. We've a step closer with what we've achieved tonight, and I do think that in some small way it repays commitment and loyalty that supporters have shown to this club over the past 8 or 9 months from what's been on in the last couple of years. It's something for them to look forward to, and I'm sure they'll enjoy it when it comes around.
Quite often post-match you see scenes of champagne being sprayed everywhere. There's none of that. This is a dressing room who are very focused, isn't it? In a dressing room who know they haven't achieved anything yet.
Yeah, and they're satisfied and they're excited about it, but What they've managed to do well over the course of the season is retain this balance of emotion, because this club can take you on a roller coaster very quickly. It can be very up and down, and as a playing squad and a staff, we have to maintain that consistency of our emotions. And so they've done that, and they've had to do it because they've had some good times and some stickier times through the course of the season. So the reality is we're in a good place at the moment, but the group has a really good focus about them. They understand why they're getting results at the moment. They just want to keep knocking them out. So they're pleased, you know, they are pleased and they're satisfied with what they've done tonight and what they've achieved, but I don't think they'd be delighted about it until they win the competition. That's what we want to do. But also stress to them tonight that what they've achieved already is fantastic. You know, it doesn't come around that often you get the chance to play at Wembley in a cup final and what will be a really big crowd as well. So got a lot of important league games between now and then, so we'll park it, but in the lead up to the final, that week leading up to it and the final itself, we'll all enjoy very much.
How much are you looking forward to from a managerial point of view?
Yeah, I am. I never really think about things too much from my own perspective, because it's my job to keep trying to get this club to win matches and try and get the club back to where I think it belongs. But I think it's something that I will reflect on perhaps either in the summer or maybe when I eventually don't do this job anymore, that I'll take an enormous amount of pride in it. But leading the club to a final at Wembley will be fantastic. You know, I'll enjoy it very much when it comes around, but it won't distract from the focus of trying to take the club back to the Championship, which is the first step in getting us back to where we should be. So a lot of hard work lies ahead, but when it comes around, the game itself I'm going to enjoy as much, I think, as everybody else associated with the club.
It was a tough game tonight, but it was a game we controlled from start to finish.
Yeah, it was a difficult match. I expected it to be, because the league fixtures have been tough as well, and it's a one-off game, and for them the incentive was just as big as us to get to a final. So I thought it was open from the outset. I thought with both sides of the game we did well. I thought defensively we were really strong, and we always will carry that threat. We always score goals. It's what we've done all season, and we did that again tonight. We scored the goals at important times, just before and just after half time, and it allowed us to maintain a good control of the game.
We're now joined by a man who made more than 300 appearances for Sunderland and managed them over two separate spells, Kevin Ball. Kevin, what does it mean to the club to be back there at Wembley?
I think more so to the club, obviously it does, like, but for the supporters and that, the fact that the weather wasn't particularly nice to us, and it was, I was going to say, peonard all night, but I would have used a different word to that. And our fans are out in the open singing their heads off and having a good night. And it's amazing what the feel-good factor can do for the club and the city, but more so for our supporters, because obviously things have not been great over the last few years. And to sort of culminate and hopefully, and again, what we still want to be a successful season in terms of promotion is also to have a Wembley trip. Gives them a fantastic day out, you know, in the capital, and they'll all be looking forward to the amount of people I've spoken to that live abroad and are coming back to watch the game. Season ticket holders that are looking to go, people that have been want to go. It just generally creates a massive feel-good factor, and it puts a smile on everybody's face, which, to be honest with you, is the most important thing.
And of course, it sets up that big final now with Portsmouth. Two big clubs, a packed house at Wembley, hopefully. How much are you excited about seeing that match at Wembley?
I think, you know, in terms of full house and that, you know, if we sort of go back to what we achieved on Boxing Day with having a full house at the stadium at Light, was absolutely tremendous, and having not seen that for a lot of years was absolutely brilliant, seeing everybody there, the place absolutely packed. So then to make that and take that on to grander scale of somewhere like Wembley, but also take into account from a personal point of view that Portsmouth were one of my old clubs, and really the club where I probably, I learned the trade, grew up quite a lot after leaving Coventry and going home, went to Portsmouth for 7.5 years, had a great time there, and a lot of my mates are still there. My son was born in St Mary's in Portsmouth and that. So for me, it's a fantastic find in the sense of two clubs that I hold so close to my heart and that. Then you go to Wembley and you would say, well, okay, you've got two League One clubs here, and by the way, you can have a full house. Everyone would go, yeah, good one. But when you look at the magnitude of the support for both clubs, without a shadow of a doubt, Wembley will be absolutely buzzing on the day. And I think that's credit to both sets of support, both Sunderland and Portsmouth.
And for yourself, like you mentioned there, are you going to be torn on the day itself with your histories at both clubs?
Not at all, like, not at all. No, none whatsoever. You know, I'll be always eternally grateful to Portsmouth Football Club, the supporters, because, like I said, I grew up there and realised what you need to do to become a professional footballer. I was very fortunate that the people there at the time saw something in me to give me that opportunity. And then obviously I had to take it, which I'd done, thoroughly enjoyed my time there, but also realised it came to an end. And when I moved to Sunderland and that, but no, I won't be torn. But I will say this, I always want Portsmouth to do well. But as you know, like I said, but Sunderland would be the club I want to win on the day. I want to win, sorry, on the day.
And you sort of mentioned it again earlier in a sense of the fans and what they've been through and what the club's been through over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But there seems to be that sort of resurgence now, doesn't there, at the club this season? And with this now is sort of like an extra boost for the club, isn't it? In that sense, it keeps that feel-good factor going.
Yeah, I think if you look what's happened over the last few years, and then it sort of comes to bottoming out, and then you go into League One and that, and everybody says, right, where do we go from here? I think you give credit to, you know, the club itself, you know, what they've done within the club, the transition, the changes, the pitch, you know, what everybody's done on the football pitch, behind the scenes, the coaching staff. Everybody's had to play a part in the transition of the club, should deservedly get a pat on the back. And then when, you know, you culminate towards the end of the season where, you know, you want to achieve promotion, you want to get back in the Championship and that, and we're in a decent position to be able to, you know, hopefully sustain that and achieve that. Again, still a lot of hard work to be done, but along the way you also get to a cup final. Like, I'll go back to what I said earlier on, it gives you that real feel-good factor, and you know that everybody be wanting a ticket for the game. If they're not wanting a ticket, they'll be watching it somewhere, but it makes for, truthfully, a great weekend for both sets of fans, and like I said, for our set of fans, something they can enjoy, because, you know, there's not been a great deal of enjoyment over the last few years.
And of course, it's 6 years since the club reached the League Cup final facing Man City. Yeah. On that occasion, do you go into this game with a little bit more hope, with knowing the fact it's more an evenly matched game, with maybe even Sunderland being favourites for it?
Listen, in every game you play, wherever you play, you should also go in with the thought that we can win the game. So, yes, you go back to the Man City one, and that would have been a very difficult task. So I'd like to think all our players on the day thought they had a chance of winning. And I've no doubt when we go to Wembley later on in this month, that both ourselves and Portsmouth, I think they've got a great chance of winning. You know, Portsmouth might have had an iffy time of late, but they're a very good side, and it'd be a very, very difficult game. Again, without sort of sounding damped on it, it's definitely not going to be one of those we're just going to have to turn. I think both teams will be going hell for leather for it, and both teams will want to win it. So it'll be a really tough game. I'd like to think it'd be an open, expansive game, and one that the fans enjoy, and ultimately on the day, whoever wins it, and good luck to them.
And of course, it's 46 years since Sunderland won the FA Cup against Leeds in the final. I mean, how much would it mean to have a cup win for the area of Sunderland, to have that league, title again?
Well, I think in terms of winners in a cup played at Wembley, I mean, I've been on the losing side twice in the 92 Cup final against Liverpool, walking up the stairs and knowing full well you haven't won it, to be presented with your runners-up medal, to take it out of his box, turn it over and see on the back it had winners. You can imagine how I felt on that day. And when I tell people the story, they automatically start laughing and said, oh, that must have been really funny. But it wasn't, actually, at the time. You know, at the time, you're thinking, looking at that there, it says winners, and you're not a winner. And then having to give it back to somebody who's beat you on the day was quite galling. Part of me wanted to run away with it, but knowing full well I didn't deserve it because I hadn't won. Obviously, I swapped myself back with Mark from Liverpool. So if I look at that, you're going to go to Wembley. You're only going to remember it if you win. Now, I'm a little bit hypocritical here because when we went in the playoff final, I still maintain that was one of the turning points of the club where we lose the playoff final to Charlton. We walk off the pitch all desolate afterwards, but the togetherness and the solidarity that came between us and the fans on the day was absolutely magnificent. And I firmly believe to this day it was a big turning point. So if you look at this one, I'd like it to be where it's another little cog turning for us to getting better and better, and it would be lovely for us to go down there and win it. And like I said, to have your name on a cup as a winner would be a fantastic achievement for this part of the season, because for me, the main achievement would still be to get promotion.
What does it mean, though, to a player themselves to reach a final at Wembley? It's surely one of the pinnacles of a player's career, isn't it?
I think for any footballer, whichever the cup is, to get to Wembley in the final means you've done something right. That means they've worked their nuts off in previous games to get there, so full credit to them. When you get there, the idea is to win it. Now, as a kid, I grew up, you know, where the FA Cup was the main one, and all you ever dreamt about was playing in an FA Cup final. I was very fortunate, along with a lot of other people, to play in an FA Cup final, unfortunately. You know, we got beat, but to get there, I can still remember the day like it was yesterday, looking at me. Dad stood up in the stands with his hand behind his back with his flat cap on, looking at me, and me thinking, oh, there's me dad, he must be really proud of me. And me mum sat there, bless her, probably didn't have a clue what was going on, because I think she probably just come there with me dad for the day out. And you look at all of that, but from a player's point of view, to walk out there at the time and see the open expanse of it, or know full well this was a place you've always dreamed of playing, must be absolutely bloody awesome. And like I said, I've experienced it, and you know, whether which players are picked on the day for ourselves or Portsmouth, I hope they enjoy the day as much as they can, because like I keep saying, that's the most important thing. So will it be the pinnacle of their career in terms of reaching Wembley? It could be. So what I would say to them is go out there and give your all and make sure you enjoy the day and the game.
And looking at the competition as a whole, I mean, everyone in the squad has played the part in this competition, hasn't they?
Yeah.
As Sunderland. Yeah. It really gives that chance, doesn't it? Especially to the younger players, to have that opportunity of first team football. How important is that for them?
I think in the sense of the cup, for the experience it's given, not just for players at our club of a young age, because also we've played a lot of seniors. I think that the managers utilise the squad very well in the cup when we've played against opposition under 21 teams, and that I've no doubt it's benefited them. They might have lost to us, but I've no doubt it would have benefited them for the experience coming up against senior players as well. From that perspective, for me, for the development of younger players as well as the experience of older players against younger players, has been one of the most pivotal successes of this cup, because the experience it gives the young players will enhance, you know, their abilities going forward and knowing what it takes to become what I would class as a senior player. Because when you're young, you know, you're fighting tooth and nail to become a professional footballer. But when you become a professional footballer, the hardest part is staying one, and you've got to work relentlessly hard. So when you come up against good teams, you know, and they like our manager has done, sent his strongest team out there, you know what you've got to aspire to. So for me, the development of young players as well as the experience of older players, the cup's been a massive success.
And how much would it mean to you personally as well to go to Wembley and see Sunderland be victorious again?
I think, like I said, Portsmouth are one of my old clubs, and I wish them all the very best in every game apart from whenever they play against us. And, you know, I hope they're way successful. For me, to stand at Wembley, watch our team go out there, give their all for the city of Sunderland and come back to victorious would be absolutely magnificent. But more so because it's a little bit of payback for the fans for, like I said, what's happened over the last few years. We want them to have a good day out at Wembley, but the only way you have a good day out at Wembley is making sure you win it.
Kevin Ball, thank you very much for your time, and have fun at the Checkered Trophy final.
I will do. Thank you very much.
The official EFL podcast, the best reaction to all the match action.
Now, Derby's 2-1 win over Wigan on Tuesday night may be remembered for a special goal.
With a roll in, a goal for Derby, and he has Mason Bennett! How about that?
What a goal that was, by the way, but the match also marked a significant milestone. It was defender Richard Keogh's 600th career appearance.
As a young boy, you know, to play one game, I know how hard it is for any professional player to, I know what they have to give up and to drive to play one game. So to play 600 is a... You know, if you told me as a young kid I'd do that, I wouldn't believe you, really. And I think I've got a little bit left in the tank yet, so hopefully I can get a few more. But to do it at, you know, my age, I think it's something I'm very proud of and one I will remember for sure.
Richard Keogh there speaking to Derby's media team. Now to a man who made his 500th career appearance last weekend, Matt Bloomfield. Matt, just tell me what that experience was like for you to reach such a milestone.
Yeah, it was a very bittersweet day, if I'm perfectly honest, because it was obviously a very proud moment to get to 500 career appearances, but we got beat, and obviously the main thing as a footballer is to win and get points on the board, so it was a very bittersweet day. Yeah, obviously on one hand very proud and it was great to score, but on the other hand, we got beat, so it was a disappointing day, and it's hard to take too many positives from that. But it's probably something that I'll look back on in the future and enjoy a little bit more. But at the time, it was a tough day.
Take me back to the very, very start of it all. What are your memories of making your debut for Ipswich almost 16 years ago now against Notts County?
Yeah, I mean, that was a very proud moment for myself, because Ipswich was the team I supported as a boy. You know, and to make an appearance for your hometown team and for your club was huge for me, and no one can ever take that away. You know, it was obviously at the time it was very disappointing that it was the one appearance, but you know, that was a dream come true, a real dream come true that night away at Notts County. It was just disappointing that it was part of a team that got beat in the League Cup. As a Championship team, we were expected to go there and win, and that didn't quite happen. And as a consequence, maybe that I never got to make another appearance for that club. So that was very disappointing, but you know, obviously a very, very proud moment for myself and my family, because you know, as Ipswich fans, the one thing you want to do is play for the first team.
And of course, making your debut in the League Cup, where so many players, so many young players have had their opportunity to make their first team debuts, haven't they?
Yeah, that was at the time. It was supposed to happen the year before. I was supposed to play the last league game of the season away at Derby, but got injured in a reserve team game during that week, so it was a delayed debut, if you like. And obviously, I was really looking forward to the game, really excited to be part of that first team squad. But you know, that was an avenue into the first team, and I genuinely thought at the time I'd done enough to be involved again. But unfortunately, the second chance never arrived, and I moved on a few months later. But yeah, it's huge, you know, as a League Cup. That's when maybe managers tend to play younger players, give them an opportunity, and that's what happened to me. And it's just unfortunate, I guess, at the time that we got beat, and you're associated with that result maybe, and you don't get an opportunity to give it another go.
Like you say, only the one appearance for Ipswich, and the move came a couple of months after to Wickham. Can you just tell us how all that came about?
Yeah, one Thursday evening, I was in the shower, had plans with some friends. I was about to head out, got out of the shower, went to my phone, and had an answering message from Tony Adams, and wanted me to sign for Wickham. So I literally packed my bag, cancelled my plans, packed my bag, went and stayed at my uncle's, which is 20 minutes from Wickham, and went training the next day. Tony wasn't expecting me to say that, but I was desperate to kickstart my career. I'd been told at Ipswich that my contract wasn't going to get renewed the following summer. So as soon as Tony Adams rang and left me that message, my mind was made up to come down here and give it a go. So I came in training, felt at home right away, and then, you know, the rest was, as they say, was history. I called Northampton on the Sunday and informed them that I wouldn't be going there on the Monday for a trial. My mind was right up where I wanted to play my football, and that following week I signed for Wickham, and haven't looked back since. You know, it's been a real rollercoaster of a ride. When someone like Tony Adams calls you and leaves you a message saying he wants you to sign for his team, you don't say no. And as soon as I walked in the door, I felt happy, I felt at home, and I felt comfortable. So that was what made my mind up to sign.
Like you say, Tony Adams, such a revered name in the game at the time. Was it him contacting you that convinced you to actually join Wickham?
Well, yeah, the first off, you know, I didn't really know too much about Wickham Wanderers. I didn't really know too much about Division 2 and Division 3 as it was then, now League 1 and League 2, but I did know that Tony Adams had a huge career, and I looked up to him as a player and as England captain, etc., growing up. So once he called, you know, that was my mind made up. I was going down to Wickham Wanderers, and but like I say, that was just the beginning of the journey. Once I got here, I was welcomed at the door by the secretary and the press officer at the time. He made me feel welcome, and I went training with the boys, and I just knew that this was the place for me. So first off, it's Tony Adams, he gets you through the door, and then you still have to carry on that journey and make a home for yourself. So that was what I was lucky enough to do. You know, I was desperate to make a career in the game. Once that was obvious that I wasn't going to be Ipswich Town, it was like, right, let's go and find somewhere to create a career. And I had an 18-month deal on the table from Wickham, and I was so glad that I took that offer.
Yeah, it sounds like a decision that you've never really regretted.
No, never regret it, not for a moment. You know, it's been a real rollercoaster ride, full of ups and downs, and you know, I'd be lying if I didn't say there's been tough times along the way. Of course, this is football. This is it's not a simple way of earning a living. It's lots of lots of tough times along with the good times. But essentially, I've loved my time here, and I've never looked back. I've never wanted to leave. I've never wanted to regret staying here for the length of time that I have. I've genuinely loved my time here. I've made some real good friends, real firm friendships, and made bonds with people in the crowd, behind the scenes. And that's not easy to find in football. You know, it's such a, especially at our level in League One and League Two, this year's contracts, maybe 2 years if you're lucky. So to keep them coming year after year and get through to 15 years is fairly unheard of. So I've loved every minute of it.
And so many ups and downs at the club, of course. Can you just name a few highlights for us?
Some highlights, of course, yeah. I mean, fresh off the memory is last season getting promoted, because 5 years previous we'd gone to Torquay and survived by the skin of our teeth by a single goal on the last day of the season when it looked like we were falling out the trapdoor into international league. So that was a culmination of 4 or 5 years of real hard work, culminated in the promotion last year. So that stands above anything else. Testimonial against Chelsea 5 years ago, that was a real special night. The League Cup run under Paul Lambert in 07-08, where we played Chelsea in a two-leg semi-final, that stands out as well. The other two promotions along the way have been great. So there's been loads of memories to take forward, and loads of memories made for life.
And of course, a lot of teammates in that time have come and gone. Who would you say in that time, who would you say is the best player you've played with?
The best player, I think, was probably, you struggle to look past Jordan Ibe. He came in the building as a 14, 15-year-old, came and trained with us whilst he was on his summer holidays from school. And I think he was in between years 10 and 11, and he's probably 14, 15 years old. And he was just unbelievable at that age. You know, you showed him on his right foot and he'd stick it in the top corner. You showed him on his left foot, top corner, and you thought, wow, like, this is a real talented boy who can go on and play for England, and he can make a career, do whatever he wants to do in the game. He obviously got the big move to Liverpool, and he's now at Bournemouth, and I watch him now, and I'm willing him to do well, and I still think there's plenty more to come from him because he's got so much talent and ability. He's the best player that's ever come through this building, and one we're proud that we managed to sort of nurture and sell on.
Yeah, that really highlights, doesn't it, that so many players do actually come through the EFL who make it to the top. And, you know, you look at the England squad, for example, and look at how many players have featured in the EFL in that squad. It really showcases the fact that you can get a really good grounding to reach the top in the EFL.
Yeah, it's huge because, you know, we have lads leave Wickham at sort of 19 and 20 with 100 appearances under their belts, whereas, you know, if you've come through a Premier League academy, you might have 5 loan appearances elsewhere under your belt, and so you're kind of playing catch-up. So I don't think it's been any great surprise that, you know, a lot of the England team is made up of lads that have either come through EFL clubs or have had a lot of loans. You know, Harry Kane had 4 or 5 loans, I think. Kyle Walker came through at Sheffield United. Harry Maguire came through at Sheffield United. I played against Joe Hart when he was at Shrewsbury many years ago. So, you know, we've sold lads on. You know, Courtney House went to Wolves with 100 appearances under his belt. Matty Ingram we sold to QPR with 100 plus appearances under his belt. So I don't think it's any surprise that those lads go on and have good careers because they're playing men's football from a younger age. So, that's no disrespect to the academy system and the higher league clubs who spend fortunes on bringing lads through. But I've seen it plenty of times here. Matty Phillips, you know, went on to play international football for Scotland and then has had a great career, played in the Premier League. He came through with us and we saw from 16, 17 years old that he had something to offer the first team. Kadeem Harris at Cardiff as well, same story, coming through, playing your first team football at 16, 17 years old and goes on and plays in the Premier League for Cardiff. And it's something we've been very proud of over the years, of the amount of lads that have come through the system here.
Of course, yeah. And looking back at your career as well, in terms of the players you've played against, who really stands out in that respect as well? I mean, I was reading when you played against Chelsea, you were being marked by Claude Makélélé at the time. That must have been quite an experience.
Yeah, that was incredible. I was maybe 24 years old with aspirations of going on and having this big career, and you have hopes and desires of what you want to do in your career. And you play against someone like that who has eyes in the back of his head, who can get around the pitch with ease, and you realise just what it takes to be a top player. And that was just an experience in itself. It was an achievement to get to the semi-finals, first and foremost, of course it was, but it was just the experience of playing against those players. It really makes you understand and appreciate quite why they're at the top of their game. They're superhuman at times, and I love that experience of trying to pit my wits against them. You realise just how good they are.
Do those sort of experiences, do they make you feel as if the football is such a privilege, isn't it, to be a part of, and especially to have such longevity in your career?
it is a privilege. It's a real privilege because all I wanted to do as a child was to have a game, a career in the game. Football, I wanted to be my life, and I've been very lucky that it has been my life. It might not have been at the level that some people get to and earn the money that some people have got to, but I've managed to pay my mortgage and support my family through playing this game. I've managed to, you know, get up every day and go into the training ground at Wickham, a place that I love. I love spending my life here. I love working hard and trying to improve myself and earning a living doing this is an absolute privilege and an honour, you know, because growing up, me and all my mates, we all wanted to be footballers, and I was the lucky one. I was the one that managed to do that. And 19 years after leaving school, I'm still earning my living, coming in and training every day, keeping myself fit and spending time with good friends. So, you know, how much luckier can you become, really?
And I take it your role at the club has changed over the period of time that you've been there as well. Can you just explain that for us, what it's been like?
Yeah, when I came through the door as a 19-year-old, I was just that lad who was trying to feed off everyone else's experience and knowledge. And now as a 35-year-old seasoned professional, I'm the one trying to pass on that nugget of information or that nugget of knowledge that I can to the young lads. It's off the pitch. I'm now club captain, and I have sort of several roles outside of the playing arena, whether it regards to supporters events or end-of-season dinners or tickets for the boys or community schemes. And it's something I really enjoy. I enjoy the responsibility. I enjoy seeing different facets of the club and how the business is run and how the club is run. And that just comes with age and experience, I guess. And, you know, I want to get into coaching and other bits and pieces when I finish playing. So the more knowledge I can gain now, the better. And my role as the club is... it's something that I'm really proud of. You know, I get a lot of responsibility on different bits and pieces, and it's something I'm more than happy to take on because it's what I enjoy. I get a kick out of it, I get a buzz out of it, and I want to prepare for life after football at the same time.
And it's your 500th game for Wickham this weekend as well. I mean, how much are you looking forward to that experience as well? Because it really is the club that has, in a sense, given you everything, hasn't it?
It has given me everything. You know, this football club's given me my whole livelihood since 19 years of age. You know, it's given me my whole career, and I'm truly grateful for that. You know, this Saturday we're playing against Sunderland Football Club, which is huge. You know, it's going to be close to a sellout, if not a sellout, in Adams Park. I mean, and you know, for me, first and foremost, an absolute thrill to play against Sunderland because look at their history and their fan base and the size of their club. It's, you know, I spent many years playing in League Two and you know, 2,000 or 3,000 people at the game, and we're going to get, you know, a sellout on Saturday against some international footballers who are earning thousands of pounds a week, and it's going to be an absolute great occasion for us, and we're going to have to raise our game. And if we can do that, we want to try and get something out of the game. So first and foremost, I'm lucky that at 35 I still get such a buzz and a kick out of playing the game, and the fire still burns, you know. So the fact that coincides with my 500th appearance for the club, you know, also, if I'm picked and I get the opportunity to lead the lads out, I'll be so proud, and I hope that will reflect in my performance.
And of course, now you're one of the longest serving players in the EFL. How much pride do you take in that fact? Because it's not easy to play at this level, to play league football for such a long, sustained period of time.
No, it's not. I think that's probably highlighted mostly by the fact that, you know, at the top level, the lads signed 4, 5, 6 year contracts. We signed sort of 1, 2 year contracts. I don't think I've ever signed anything longer than that. So every summer or every other summer, you're coming to this unstable time in your life where you might be moving on. Is there other clubs that want you? Does this club want you? Are you better suited moving on? Is it the right time to leave? Is it the right time to stay? And it's been unsettling over the years. That obviously, with that, becomes more opportunity for people to leave. You know, if the club changes manager and they want to bring their own new players in, it's obviously very unsettling. But I've been very fortunate and very lucky that I've had some great managers here. I've got on with all of them, and they've seen something in me that they think can aid their team and aid their squad. So that's been very fortunate. I've always tried to give each manager, you know, what do they want on the pitch, to see if I can give them that and add to my game if necessary, and that's the way it's become. And, you know, obviously over these last 5, 6 years, I've had Gareth Ainsworth as manager, who's really grabbed the club by the scruff of the neck just when it looked like we might be dropping out of the trap door into the National League. He's rejuvenated the whole club, and he'll go down as a Wickham Wanderers great because what a job he's done. You know, we went through a takeover period, and Andrew Harrod got on board as well and really helped with the aid of Gareth and Andrew. They really dragged the club forward, and we're going from strength to strength at the moment. The infrastructure, possible takeover investment, and it's an exciting time for the club. So I've got a lot to be thankful for Gareth, for what he's done for myself personally and for my career and the club as a whole, because without Wickham Wanderers, I wouldn't have been able to enjoy this 15 years in football that I've been able to do. So I am genuinely genuinely, truly thankful for that, and I'm hopefully I've given them a bit back in the same time.
And finally, how long do you believe you can keep going now in terms of coming in towards the end of your career? Have you still got a few years left after this? And what do you hope to do after the game? I think you sort of mentioned it earlier, you're looking into going into coaching, aren't you?
Injuries being kind to me, I hope to go on for a little while longer yet. I feel as good as I have done for several years. That's not just lip service, that's genuine. For whatever reason, I'm able to still enjoy my fitness, which is great. And the fire still burns strong, so there's no reason why I want to give up playing anytime soon. Quite how long I'm lucky to keep playing for, I don't know, but you know, I'm doing my coaching badges, currently doing my UEFA A licence, and I moving my family back to Suffolk, so I'm in Ipswich on Wednesday evenings with our under-15s, with one of my heroes, Mick Stockwell, coaching them. So I'm trying to add to my future and make plans for that, because you never know, like I say, with this game, you never know when it's all going to come to an end. But equally, I don't have any sights on giving up anytime soon, because I love playing. That's what gives me my buzz, that's what gives me my adrenaline at the weekend, and that's why I live my life. So that comes first and foremost, but equally at the same time, you'd be foolish not to plan for the future. So coaching figures predominantly in those thoughts. I've done a journalism degree as well, so quite what road I go down when I finish playing, I don't know. But you know, after playing your career in the lower leagues, you have to start working the day after you retire. So I want to be as educated and as qualified as I can to hopefully go and enjoy more success when I finish playing.
Sounds like you'll have plenty of options on the table when you finish your career. Matt, thank you very much for joining us, and yeah, good luck with the rest of your career. And cheers, hopefully we'll be speaking to you when you make your 600th appearance, maybe.
Yeah, we'll look forward to it. I look forward to it.
EFL Fixtures in Focus.
Now it's set to be another exciting weekend of EFL action this weekend. We're now joined by Sky Sports commentators Andy Hinchcliffe and Don Goodman. Starting with you, Andy, you're at Norwich versus Swansea. For Norwich, this game's a real chance for them, isn't it, to make a statement, kind of like what Leeds did last Friday night.
Well, that's all you can do, because it's so congested at the top of the table, with Sheffield United in the mix as well. All Norwich can do is concentrate on themselves, and that's what they've done so well. I expected maybe for the sides up at the top to start feeling a bit jittery, to start putting in poor performances and not win games as consistently as Norwich done. You look at the last six games, Norwich are the form side in the Championships. If you consider the pressure that they're under, yet they're still playing as well as ever and they're winning game after game, it is incredible. It's testament again to their ability as a team, their footballing ability, but mentally to stay strong when you lead the pack and put in good performances week in and week out. But this game against Swansea should suit Norwich as well, because Swansea are a very attractive passing team, which is what we know Norwich are as well. So actually, of all the teams they could maybe choose to play at this time of the season, playing ahead of the other two teams in Leeds and Sheffield United, probably Swansea is not a bad pick for them.
And looking at the match itself, like you say, it should be an exciting game with both brands of football that are on offer.
Yeah, I think so, because obviously with Norwich, they're a team that are possession-based. They are, Swansea are as well, but normally Norwich do dominate the ball, whoever they play against. So Swansea might have to change their kind of game plan a little bit, but they've got some really pacey players in their team. They've got Nathan Dyer, Wayne Routledge, Dan James, are one of the quickest players in the Championship as well. So Graham Potter might look at his game plan, and rather than try and out-football Norwich, he's trying to say, OK, if they have the ball, they step onto us, can we maybe catch them on the counter-attack? And they've certainly got a lot of pace. Ollie McBurnie's knocking the goals in as well. So, like I say, with Norwich, they won't mind playing Swansea, because it will be a pure football match. But Swansea, if they do adapt their kind of game plan and play with a bit more dynamism and pace on the counter-attack, which is not how they normally play, they could cause Norwich a few problems. So again, it's which side is going to be willing to tweak their game plan. It's more likely to be Swansea.
And how difficult a test is this for Swansea, though, looking at the match with Norwich in the form that they've been in so far this season?
It's going to be tough. Of course, it's going to be tough, because they're top of the league for a good reason. They're incredibly consistent. As I say, they do dominate the ball. But Swansea, there's been some talk of them maybe, you know, pushing on for a playoff place. They're only 7 points off the playoff. But there's been a huge change, of course, with relegation at Swansea. Graham Potter coming in. They're trying to get back to the old traditions of Swansea's attractive passing football, a very young squad as well. So looking at Swansea, I feel they've had a really solid season after relegation. And maybe, yes, if they can get something out of the Norwich game, they've got some kind of difficult games coming up as well. But they've got a way of playing now. And I think, as I say, they're trying to get back to those traditions of old, and they've got the players to do that. So there's an outside chance they can make the playoffs. I'm sure that wouldn't have been the plan at the start of the season. But again, just not getting embroiled at the bottom end of the table with a young squad, I think, was key for Graham Potter. So they're a really attractive side to watch as well. So it's worth tuning in to see them play as much as Norwich.
And yeah, like you mentioned there with Swansea, I mean, it is really, really crucial that they take 3 points in this match, isn't it, if they have any hope of getting into the playoffs?
Well, they will, and that's how I'm sure they'll approach it, because in many ways they've got nothing to lose. They're not going to get relegated. They're 14 points clear of the bottom three. So they can, in a way, relax and kind of play their natural game or adapt their game with the players that they've got. So they're under clearly less pressure, but they've got to maybe put themselves under a bit of pressure and say, you know what, if we get something from this game or win this game, there is a chance of making the playoffs. So whenever it comes around, if that opportunity is there, you've got to kind of strike while the iron is hot. But that's the thing with Norwich. They don't seem nervous at all. So normally a team this stage of the season, top of the table, with you being the away side at their ground, you'd expect them to be a little bit nervous. But they're very relaxed. So I think Swansea know that they're not going to get any kind of strange performance from Norwich. They're going to have to play very well, Swansea, to get something out of the game. And if they do, then there is that possibility that there's that carrot of finishing in the top six, which would be incredible considering kind of the changes that happened in the summer.
Yeah, should be an exciting match indeed. Now moving on to Sunday's game, the second City derby. Don, for you, I mean, you've played in that area, but how ferocious of a match is this, and how passionate are the people in that area about football?
Well, I don't think you actually need to be from the West Midlands to know. You only have to listen to the interviews, watch the games themselves, and you will hear just the passion for this game from both sets of fans. And actually, for such a very long period of time, Aston Villa have been the big cheeses of the region, haven't they? So the fact that Birmingham go into this game above their arch enemy is a brilliant effort from Birmingham City. Probably an unexpected one. We probably all would have expected Aston Villa to be ahead of Birmingham at this stage of the season. But it's set up absolutely perfectly. They've both got an outside chance of a playoff spot. It's just set up perfectly for an absolutely cracking game.
And Andy, going back to you, you've played in some fierce derbies yourself as a former Everton, Man City and Sheffield Wednesday player. How do you believe the second City derby compares to that?
Well, it's a huge game, of course. It's a huge game, and I've commentated on the games, and I've been to the games as well. And it's not lost on you at all. It's as big a derby as you can get, but it's a crucial game, you know, in terms of possibly these two sides making the playoffs. If Birmingham were to get into the top six this season, it would be extraordinary, because Gary Monk, what he's had to deal with financially, of course, the limitations on bringing players in. They've hardly changed their team an awful lot. Che Adams has been absolutely outstanding, the player we thought he might be this season. And for Birmingham to be above Aston Villa after 35 games, no one would have predicted that. And Aston Villa, if they were to win this game as well, they do have a good chance of finishing in the playoffs. And that would have been where they needed to finish, top six at the start of the season. So there's clearly more pressure on Aston Villa than Birmingham. And the game at Villa Park was an absolute belter as well. Jack Grealish is back for Villa, so it should be another cracking game.
And Don, looking, like Andy mentioned there, looking at the table, both teams going for the playoffs, how critical is it for both teams that they get the result looking at the league form?
Well, for me, it's almost, I say this sort of slightly through grit, it's almost a must-win game for Aston Villa. So Andy's absolutely spot on in terms of the pressure being on them because of the expectation levels. But what you've seen in recent weeks is that from sixth place Bristol City down, you know, with the exception possibly of Preston and Sheffield Wednesday, you've seen form from all the other teams chasing that playoff spot that can only really be described as patchy. So, you know, that is the reason that Aston Villa aren't, you know, totally out of the picture yet. But I think if they lose this particular game, I just think with 10 games to go, that there could be as many as sort of 10 points behind come the end of the weekend, sixth place. I just think a bit of patchy form, it would be an enormous ask. So I do think that because of the expectation levels, the pressure is on Aston Villa, and you know, Birmingham would love it, wouldn't they, if they could get one over on them. They were a little bit unlucky at Villa Park when they went 1-0 up and had a real great chance to go 2-0 up, and then you just wonder whether the outcome of that game might have been different. So they'll feel that they owe Villa one from that game.
And Andy, how do you see this match going then in terms of the both teams? You mentioned earlier the fact that it's surprising to see that Birmingham are ahead of Villa at this stage of the season.
It's not really surprising. I've just been incredibly impressed because normally coaches talk about having a wealth of players to choose from so they can chop and change and play different formations. But Gary's pretty much played 4-4-2, and they absolutely deserve to be where they are. They've played some brilliant football. He's got, as I said, with Chad, and he's got the very best out of the players around him as well. But it's just the pressure. There is clearly less pressure, but it's a derby. So there's pressure on Birmingham from that aspect. Villa have the derby pressure, but also they're chasing the top six. And with Grealish back, it is that Grealish factor. I'm not saying Villa are a one-man team, but they're a very different team. We saw that against Derby. The goal he scored against Derby was arguably the goal of the season. There's not many Championship players that can score a goal of that quality. So having Grealish back gives them a real opportunity. But defensively, there's a lot of injury problems. It's by no means the back four that that Villa would want to put out, the Dean would want to put out. So actually, it's really interesting from so many different angles. We expected maybe Villa to be pushing for promotion and Birmingham maybe battling relegation, but they're both around mid-table with the possibility of pushing on. And that's what makes this game even more important. It just ramps up the pressure. It's a big derby game anyway, but the 3 points could be key for both sides come the end of the season.
Skybet League One.
And moving down to League One now, speaking of tight matches, another one that you're at, Don, Portsmouth against Charlton at the Valley. I mean, how important a match is this for both sides?
Oh, it's huge, really. I mean, Portsmouth had a very, very much needed win against Bradford City last weekend. They were on the back of a really poor run, weren't they? Drawing a whole load of games on the back of three defeats. So the pressure really was on them. They had a struggling team coming to Cratton Park and they really did need to produce. I just think from their perspective now, that will almost certainly guarantee them the consolation of a playoff spot if they're not able to chase those three teams above them down. In terms of those three teams above them, it's just a remarkable pace that they've set. They are three exceptional teams, actually, and one of them is going to be desperately unlucky. I watched Barnsley at Southend last week, and I have to say it's as impressive a League One performance as I have witnessed. They absolutely were fantastic. And then you look at Luton on 22 games unbeaten, Barnsley 15 unbeaten, Sunderland 13 games unbeaten. They're the three above Portsmouth. So realistically, it's almost a must-win game for Portsmouth. As for Charlton, obviously, you know, they've got a little bit of a cushion, but sort of the run of form they're in, they've drawn five of the last sort of 10 games, and it's those draws that have perhaps curtailed their automatic promotion aspects and maybe allowed it, that will just give perhaps Peterborough and Doncaster below them a little bit of encouragement that they can overhaul Charlton. So it's a big game for both at the top end.
You sort of mentioned it there, but in terms of Portsmouth, you look at how crucial this game is in terms of their hunt for the automatic spots.
Mm.
Is it still achievable for them? Look, like you mentioned earlier, looking at the teams above and the form that they're in, is that gap at this stage of the season, could they cut that gap even further?
Well, I mean, if I were a betting man, I would say no. The consolation for Portsmouth is that next Tuesday, Barnsley hosts Sunderland. So they're going to know that at least one, if not both of them, are going to drop points. But having said all of that, like I said, I saw Barnsley last week. Sunderland have found form again. Luton have never been out of form. So, you know, for Portsmouth to be able to sort of bridge what is currently a 5-point gap with those above them in such form, it's a tall order. Basically, what they're going to need to do is replicate the form that they showed at the start of the season. At the start of the season, in the first 11 games, they won 8 and drew 3. There are 11 games to go for Portsmouth, and that is the kind of form that they're going to have to display to give themselves any chance.
And of course, for Charlton, I mean, is it a case of them just consolidating their playoff place? Because this could really be a match that we see in the playoffs, couldn't it, looking at how the table's shaping up?
That's a huge possibility. You know, you have to feel a little bit for Lee Bowyer. They lost Carl and Grant, didn't they, in the January transfer window, and they're not the most prolific team, certainly in terms of the top six anyway going. And so to lose your top goal scorer must have been a real body blow for Lee Bowyer. But he's doing a sound job. You know, it's an important game, like I said, for them to really consolidate that playoff position. They'll be glad to be at home. They're unbeaten in their last 11 games at the Valley, and they're up against the Portsmouth team that in recent times, or certainly in 2019 actually, have struggled to win games away from home. So, you know, it's a good opportunity for Charlton to narrow the gap to Portsmouth to just 2 points, which would be remarkable given the sort of starts that both of these clubs made. So really, really exciting game in prospect, and I'm looking forward to it.
Skybet League 2.
And our featured game in League 2 this week is third bottom against third from top, Port Vale against Mansfield. Don, how important is this game for both sides looking at their situations?
Oh, well, the contrasting prizes on offer for both of them. Mansfield obviously automatic promotion has been in their grasp. You know, it was looking really, really good, and Port Vale really at the bottom, avoiding, you know, it'd be inconceivable to a Port Vale fan that they could potentially go out of the Football League. I mean, no win in the last seven games, just two draws, 2 points they've taken, and they've seen the teams below them, Notts County and Macclesfield, while not set the world alight in terms of results and points, they've certainly picked over that seven game winless run that Port Vale have had. Notts County have picked up 8 points and Macclesfield 6 points, and that's why they only find themselves, Port Vale, with a 4 point cushion and ever increasing pressure on their shoulders. So for both of these teams, it's an enormous game for very, very different reasons. Obviously, the Milton Keynes Dons are the ones chasing Mansfield, and their four wins on the trot have seen them close the gap to Mansfield to just 2 points, whereas, you know, four games ago it was looking for all the world as if Mansfield were almost a shoo-in for one of the three automatic spots.
Yeah, Andy, both teams have got teams really breathing down their necks. What's it like? What's the pressure like in the EFL at this stage of the season?
It doesn't matter what league you're playing in. It's all about mental strength as much as technically how good you are. I got promoted just once in my career from the old second division to the first. And I do remember the last five or six games are absolutely horrible. You just want to get the job done. You want it over with. And you just have to keep sticking at it because, of course, the teams at the top of League Two, it's a four-way battle for those three places. They've worked incredibly hard, played incredibly well to be up at the top of the table. But the difference is mentally, what are you willing to do to get the job done, and can you hold your nerve? It might seem, well, that's, yeah, you would say that. It's pretty obvious, isn't it? But actually carrying it out game after game and getting the job done, that's why it's so crucial you get to the final 10 games of a season. As it starts to tick down into kind of single figures for games left, that's when the pressure is really ramped up. And of course, it's so tight at the top. Even the goal difference is incredibly tight at the top of League Two as well. So it's going to go right to the wire, probably going to go to the last game. So then it is really about holding your nerve all the way through those final kind of five or six, seven games. And certainly on the last day of the season, there's going to be a major story there. And there will be a team that will be disappointed and drop down into the playoffs. But it's wonderful for the neutral, maybe for the fans of those clubs. It's nerve-wracking, it's nail-biting, but that's what we go and watch football for, and that's why players play the game as well, whether they can kind of test themselves and can they cope with this pressure that comes, whether it's League 2, League 1 or the Championship. The pressure at the top of the table and the bottom is extraordinary.
And Don, Port Vale haven't won in their last eight games, like you mentioned earlier. How important is it to rebuild that confidence going into this stage of the season? It needs to be sooner rather than later for them, doesn't it?
Well, it does, It has been the home form as well. You know, they've only won four of the 17 games. They've taken more points away. They've lost a lot fewer games away from home. So Vale Park, it hasn't been a fortress. It hasn't been anything like a fortress. So, but during the course of the season, you do play games when you're playing that you reflect on that are season changing, season defining moments. And I think from Port Vale's perspective, if they could get one over a high flying team like Mansfield, I think it would really, really boost their confidence and give them the belief that they can pull themselves away from the danger.
Certainly another exciting weekend in store for us in the EFL. Thank you very much for your time, Andy and Don. That's it from us this week. Join us again next time. Thanks for tuning in.
The official EFL podcast. The best reaction to all the match action, available every week.